All right, so we've worked our way to the end of this chapter, and the very last portion, he talks about the God of evil, because we still have to deal with this evil issue, right? We have provided, he says, a biblical vision of God's sovereignty and meticulous decree in which he ensures that the, you know, his blueprint for history will providentially come to fruition. He says, but we have also shown that God's sovereignty is not at odds with the voluntary choices of, you know, responsible and willing agents. Scripture clearly affirms both facts, right? God's sovereignty, but yet our free will, we're free to choose, and therefore we're responsible. Here's the question, though. How do these facts bear on the ubiquitous presence of evil in the world, right? That's the issue.
And drawing it back. Yeah. So the question is, does God's sovereign will encompass that which violates his moral precepts? Ooh. Indeed, his own moral character? Does God have a hand in those things? Is that what we're saying? Mm-hmm. Does God merely allow evil, or is it part of his eternal decree for history? Mm. Again, look at Christ on the cross. That should be the ultimate example that we need to point to. As whatever side you're on, we have to look at that culmination of history right there, the peak of history. And if it is part of his eternal decree, then how can he escape the charge that he is to be ultimately blamed for a plan that includes what we know is destructive to human flourishing? It appears to violate his impeccable goodness. This is the most difficult question that Reformed theology faces. How does it address this charge? Next two chapters.
All right. All right, so cliffhanger, yeah. There, right? Yeah, right.
Right.